Yes, thank you.
Okay, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Glenn from Santa Maria.
Wow. You know, it's such an honor and a privilege to be up here on my birthday, man. It's like,
hi, Glenn.
Glenn Alcoholic. It's like a blessing, man. And tonight, if I could touch one person, you know, give them hope, that's all that matters, you know. I'm going to tell a little bit about my experience, which I'm kind of having a hard time with because pretty bad past, but we'll get through it. You can fill in the blank spots. And then I'm going to go into the book. Everything about the strength could be from the program, so it's going to be, hopefully it'll make it easier for somebody to understand the steps and stuff like that. Okay, let's do this. Oh, yeah, wait. Okay, there's a pessimist. He said his glass is half empty. The optimist, no. God, I can't even. The optimist says his glass is half full. The alcoholic says, hey, are you going to finish that? Okay, a little bit in there. But anyway, I'll start back. I was born in Guadalupe, California, raised there.
Yeah.
And my grandparents are Italian. They came from Italy in 1927, ended up buying the Far Western and all that property there. So they're actually the founders. If you look in the back of the menu at Far Western, it's Mr. and Mrs. Angelo Ferrari. And the reason I say that is there was booze everywhere. They had wine cellars. I mean, they drank a lot, but they worked. They worked hard, and they got things done. So I'm thinking, man, maybe they weren't alcoholics. You know, it's crazy. You know, they were hard workers, and there was always parties at the Guadalupe Park. You've probably even been there. You know, when the Far West had these parties, and I can remember like 5 years old, 6 years old, running around and drinking people's drinks because they were like drunk, leaving drinks everywhere. You know. And just, I mean, getting hammered at that age. You know, I was the youngest out of all the cousins. You know, my family. I had my brother that's 5 years older than me, and my sister's like 10 years older than me. So I was the youngest out of the whole clan. I got my butt kicked a lot. But yeah, it was alcohol all over the place. And even in my grandma's house, it was like they let us drink. You know, have a little bit of wine and stuff like that. So yeah, it was crazy, man. But the crazy thing is, my parents didn't drink at all. No drugs, no drinking or nothing. They just worked. That's all they did was work. And pretty much we ran around. Well, Lupi back then, you know, you could run down the street. Everybody knew everybody. You know, they like had to worry about it. You know, but anyway, get past that. At 5 years old, we moved to Santa Maria, right there on Morrison Street. It was the Flamingo Gardens. It was, you know, best place in town. Now it's like second worst, or to Bunny or something like that. But anyway, came here. I grew up really quick in size-wise. I went through Adams School, you know, and I was all good. I never drank during those times, you know, going through elementary and all that. But as soon as I passed sixth grade into the summer going into seventh grade is when it was on. You know, I met some people and I started experimenting with, my grandma would buy us booze. And in my seventh grade, she would buy us beers and stuff like that, and we'd go to somebody's house and we drink it, you know. Then we started using, you know, pot and stuff like that. But the junior high is where I really started getting going, you know. We had, but my story has drugs in it, but I'll try to keep it. Everything I did had alcohol and drugs, just put it that way. A lot of alcohol. And, man, it was like we started, I mean, just doing drugs and drinking in junior high. Okay, when I got to Santa Maria High, I mean, anytime something was happening, I was always there. I was in the riots at Santa Maria High with the Mexicans and the whites. I don't know if anybody remembers that.
I did.
Anyway, when I got to be a freshman, I was already, like, grown up. I was big already, you know, so I got picked on a lot by the older guys and stuff like that, but that all came to a stop. Jack. And then Jack, my sponsor, was actually in the same high school with me. I ended up playing in the varsity team my sophomore year with them. I didn't really play that much, sat on the bench. But and by the time I was, I think, 14 or 15, I was already heavy into drugs and drinking big time. I mean, I look back now, it's like I was an alcoholic. As soon as I started drinking, man, I can remember. I mean, we went to the end, man. I mean, blackouts already at the age of 15. And just doing crazy stuff. And I started hanging out with older people, you know, getting through. I got kicked out of Santa Maria High, my sophomore year. Went to Rigetti, got kicked out of there. Went to Delta and got kicked out of there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's all we did was party and party. I mean, I'm sure people here remember the keg days, keg parties.
Okay.
If you don't know, if you're young and you've ever been to keg parties, you missed out on some good parties. It got to the point where, I mean, me and my friends, we were so bad and just crazy that they would lock their side gates, you know, when they knew we were coming and stuff. I mean, it was bad. They didn't even want us there because we'd drink everything. We'd always fight, you know, and crash the party. And
I remember.
Yeah, I mean, it was bad. It was like, you know, kicking in doors. It was bad. I had a lot of fun, though, you know. A lot of fun in those cake day parties, but it was just drinking, and I didn't realize it, but I now that I, you know, I'm in this AA and I'm doing all this stuff, it's like, man, what an alcoholic, man. We used to sit there and polish, I mean, I'm amazed I'm still alive. People die from alcohol poisoning, and we used to down so much booze, it's amazing I'm still alive. And people die, alcohol poisoning. People, when we were partying shit, you know, Joe Blow died, you know, last night they didn't wake up, you know. And it's crazy because we used to get these big old, those pots. They put them in the front door, and everybody would bring whatever, it didn't matter. Whatever you had, we poured in there and punch, man, and it was on. So all through my high school was party. Let me back up a little bit. At 16, I was arrested for armed robbery. At 16, so that, you know, that tells you something. At 17, the judge told me I had a choice either going to the Marine Corps or go to jail. So I chose the Marine Corps. You know, it's like when I got there, I go, wow, I should have went to jail, you know. Back then, it was pretty hardcore, man. That's where people, I think four people died in boot camp when I was there. That was before Mothers Against the Eyes. But anyway, I mean, back up a little bit, the Pepper Street Plaza shootings, I was there. I mean, a lot of stuff happened in those years in Santa Maria. A lot of deaths and stuff like that. Anyway, it gets this going a little bit. After I kicked out of Delta, I ended up joining the Marine Corps at 17. Went to boot camp and all that. Like I said, when I got off the buses, like, I was thinking, oh my God, what'd I do? You know, because they were hardcore. And I said, you know, I was thinking I should have went to jail. It would have been easier, you know? It's crazy. But anyway, I did that with the boot camp. No drinking or drugs in there, that's for sure. And got up through that, went to ITS, and went straight. They were telling people, oh, Joe Blow, Europe, this guy, Germany. And I go, seminar, Guam. And I go, Guam? I go, where's Guam? He goes, the asshole of the world. He goes, as I slide down the banister of life, it's a sliver of my ass. He said, I'm going, oh, God, great, you know. This island's 30 miles long and 15 miles wide. And so I end up in Guam. This island is crazy. I mean, the towns are wall, bar. I mean, just bars everywhere. So drinking was on, you know, and we had soda machines out of our barracks with full of beers for a quarter. You get a beer. And the NCO club. So anyway, in Guam, I raised some hell, man. I got in a lot of trouble over there because it was just full-on drinking. You know, we were guarding top secret stuff, weapons and stuff out in the jungle, and we were high. I mean, I started getting into opium. I mean, I started slamming opium and stuff back then. It was crazy. I got in a lot of problems over in Guam, a lot of trouble. And I was actually dating the governor of Guam's daughter, which, hey, he didn't like that at all. You know, here's a Marine, you know, all screwed up dating his daughter. And but he couldn't do nothing. What's he going to do? He didn't want to hurt his little girl's feelings, I guess. But after raising havoc, you know, just drinking a lot of booze in the military, you know, I thought I was going to get away from this stuff. It was like 10 times worse in the military as far as drinking and drugs and we were like military of the bases, you know. We had control of everything. We were guarding, you know, the posts and the entrance and stuff. And so we would always let the drug dealers come in. I mean, we were fronting out, because the Air Force, Navy, Army, and Marines, they all get paid on the same day of every month. Everybody gets paid. So we would front out all the stuff to everybody, and then payday we'd go out and collect. I mean, just, we're supposed to be protecting, you know, the bases and shit. And here we are, you know. I mean, I got pictures of me sitting on base with my gun in my hand, and a drink in his hand, and a joint in my mouth. I mean, I'm on guard duty. You know, it's like crazy shit, man. And anyway, that came to a halt. You know, we got in a lot of trouble. I ended up in the Briggs, and my staff sergeant, I think the governor had something to do with it, too. So they're going to give me a medical discharge out of the Marine Corps before I end up getting dishonorable, because that's how bad it was. So I ended up getting a medical discharge out of the Marine Corps. And the governor even came to the airplane when I was leaving, you know, to see me off and stuff. And his bodyguards gave me some words of wisdom. They told me, if you ever step foot on Guamanian soil, we're going to bury you in it. Yeah, that was some words of wisdom right there. Yeah, so I will never go back there because crazy stuff. But after that, I came back. I was 17, about 19 years old. Came back to Santa Maria. Well, it was in San Francisco, and they let me out right there. And I'm walking out of the base over there where they let you go. And I'm like thinking, wow, now what? You know, here I'm all been geared up for all this Marine Corps shit and crap and the way I was. So I ended up coming home, ended up hooking up with some this organization. I won't say no names, but they're still around. They're big right now, and started freelancing for them and doing work for them. And I had drugs, booze, money, cars, Harleys, women. I mean, anything we wanted, we had it. But we had, you know, did a lot of work, and ended up one time. I don't know. He's not even alive no more. He wasn't in this group, so I'm gonna say his name. I actually run over with Eddie Perea. He's dead now. And if anybody knows him, he's one crazy SOB. And anyway, we were in Santa Barbara, and we had brought a lot of drugs up there. We were doing a lot of drinking up there, a lot of beer and a lot of whiskey and stuff. And somehow a raid happened, and I swallowed like, I don't know, 30 balloons. And after that all happened, I was trying for like over the whole day and night to get it out. I couldn't get it out. And I'm in the bathroom, and I'm hearing these guys out in the apartment room, and they're saying that they're going to cut my stomach open because they wanted the dope. That's how bad they wanted it. Yeah, and I'm saying, I'm in this little bathroom. There's one door out, and there's one door to get out of the room. I got out. Yeah, I always carried a gun. But I got out of that one, came all the way back to Santa Maria in a truck on the floorboard. They were already busting up in my stomach. And I got back, and my friend had me drink some stuff, and I got all that out. But anyway, from all that, they put a hit on me because it was like thousands of dollars worth of stuff. You know, they thought, somebody had told them, framed me, said that I had stole it and all that stuff. You know? So here, you know, I went up in the mountains for a couple of weeks hiding, and my mom drops me off. She knows what's going on. I mean, this is all bad. This is not how I was thinking, you know. Anyway, that all cleared up the stuff, and see where we at here. I'm trying to get to my experience. I mean, I got like 40-something years of just crazy shit, and a lot of it I'm not even going to talk about because we don't want to hear that crap. But I'm trying to get through it. Let me see. Then, after all that, I ended up moving to Hawaii, you know, thinking it's going to be better. Moved to Hana, Maui. And, man, I tell you, those guys party over there. They drink all day and all night beer. They're crazy in Hawaii. Anyway, that went on for a few years, just drinking and partying. It was all partying. I worked for Hanaho Construction, but after that, it was party on. And they grow marijuana all over the place, so it's everywhere. Anyway, we got in, I'm trying to get through this experience. I don't even like talking about this experience. It's like kind of boring. But we ended up getting in this big old fight out in the beach, and I got shot in the head right here at an angle that stuck in my head. But that's why I got expedited. I have told you my last story. I was expedited from Hawaii. I managed to get my hands on the guy that shot me, and so I ended up where my crime was more worse than him shooting me. So out of the hospital and I recovered, I got expedited. They gave me, you know, expedited means you can't ever come back, sign papers. If you do, you'll be charged for the same stuff and they'll try you. But it was self-defense, so they expedited me. They gave me that choice. Okay, yeah, I'll take it, you know. They escorted me to the plane, and all the way to Hawaii. Then when I got to Hawaii, there was people there waiting there to make sure I got on the plane. They didn't care. Once I got, they wanted me out of Hawaii. They didn't care if I went to California or wherever. They just wanted me out of there. So, you know, that experience, by that time, I'm like 27. I had to leave Hawaii and flew out of there, came back. Man, a lot of the stuff I forgot, man. All the stuff that I'm remembering now is kind of sick, you know. Came back to San Maria, see, 27. That's when I hooked up with another organization. I have 8 certificates, 8 different programs that I've done. I mean, that's pitiful, man. 8 different programs just over the period, you know, that I went to, you know, diversions, Prop 36s, I mean, all kinds of stuff. You know, I ended up in Napa. I had a diversion, so my friends up there, biker friends, told me to come up there and live with them because you don't want to stay in the same town that you got your diversion in because the cops know you, they're going to be pulling over. So I went up there where nobody knew me, never got tested, never nothing. I got high and drinking all the time through my whole diversion. This is crazy, you know, and then up there, got in a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble, man. I mean, just to give you an example, the guys that I was living with, he was a collector, and they'd go collect money and stuff, and if you didn't have, I mean, it was a lot of money, and if you didn't have it, he would take your thumb. Serious. This guy was like 6'6", 380 pounds. He was like a razorback with a bad attitude. Yeah, he was, I mean, I even didn't, you know, I was like, I was always thinking, if I ever get my hand, don't ever let him get your hands on you, you know, if you ever got pissed off. Yeah, he was big, but he would take, you know, and I've seen people with their thumbs missing over the years in different places, and I'm thinking, whoa, that's not one of them, you know, it's like, it's crazy. But anyway, I got in a lot of trouble up there. I had to leave there. Man, yeah, see, I'm leaving a lot of stuff out because we don't need to know that. And so I ended up leaving there. I mean, there's a lot of times people, there's a lot of times where people wanted to kill me, you know. It was so bad that when I took a shower, I had a gun in my shower. I always thought ahead, you know. It's like, if this happens, I'm going to do this. You know, if that happens, I'm going to do that. So it's like, you know what, actually, it's not that I was a badass. It was all fear. Today I know that. I was running on fear all those years, man. Fear saved me. Fear kept me, you know, one step ahead of everything. And it kept me alive, you know. It was all fear, man, because, you know, there was a lot of death in my past, and a lot of suicides, a lot of overdoses, a lot of things happened, you know, that I'm not happy with, you know. But you know what, though, it's like I've let all that stuff go, you know, and because you got to, you know. I mean, it's crazy stuff we do, you know. And like I was telling Matt, you know, they say that we're not sick people, we're sick people trying to get better, but there are some bad people in these rooms. I'm one of them. I mean, I was, you know. yeah, nice thing, you know. I just, you know, basically, you guys know where I come from. I come from a pretty dark and violent past, you know, and it was and I ran on fear, man. There was nothing badass about it. It was fear. It was, you know, fear of my life. So that's how I got through it, you know. And I'm gonna jump up to 2008. It was the first time that I ever even came into AA. I used to drive by over there at the old Alano Club, and I'd go like this, losers! You know? come to find out, I was a loser, man. I was outside of the fence. I was a loser. And I ended up in there 2008 because I got in trouble. So and I did it. You know, I always fight. I always fight everything. I don't care, even like the last program, the VTC, any program I get into, anything, I got to fight it to the last, you know. And I always lose. I always give up, you know. And in 2008, I ended up getting accumulating 4 years. So with 3 years in the program, I was doing all right. You know, I was a service. I was doing everything I was supposed to be doing. And then about the third year, I stopped going. I stopped doing meetings. I stopped being of service. I mean, everything at once, because I was doing a lot of service, and I just stopped everything. And I lasted a year out there, but bam, it snuck up on me and got me. It got me, man. At the fourth year, man, I was back on a run. I was back out there. because I didn't stay with the program. I didn't do that daily thing, you know. It's like, I thought I had it, you know. I thought I had it at 3 years. I didn't have shit, you know. It's like, what I got now is like 100 times more than what I had those 4 years, because I'm doing the work, you know. And so I was on a run from 2008 till, God, man, to 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, I went out. So, yeah, there's a couple of years in there, 2 or 3 years in between this one and that one. I didn't even realize, man. I mean, time goes by quick when you're out there doing stupid shit. And then from that, you know, other stuff, you know, from these years that I was out and a little before 2008, it was basically my garage. It was like liquor store, drug dealer home, or liquor store, drug dealer jail. It was like, I know I'm going to jail, I just don't know when. You know, that's just the way it was. I've been in so many, and I'll back up a little bit, I was in Utah, I got busted for a kidnapping, and I ended up in this jail, the Western jail, like cowboy, you've seen the cowboy movies, and these guys are like cowboys, and it's like, they don't like people like me. And I'm actually even having to look out, making sure they're not building some hanging thing out there. You know, that's what I was thinking about. They don't screw around with it, you know. So I spent some time in that jail. It had two cops, and it was like a Western jail. It had the bars and all that shit, and they're wearing cowboy hats, and they're not liking me. So I stayed there for a while. I ended up getting out. That's when they escorted me to the state line, made sure I left. You know, I had my friends were waiting on the other side of the state line. They got me a lawyer. Yeah. So I've been kicked out of Kern County. I've been chased out of Tulare. I mean, wanting to kill me all the way to Tascadero. I mean, I used to have a weapon, arm's reach anywhere I went in my house. That's how bad it was. I mean, it was like just fear for my life, man. But you know, I made it through all that shit. I'm here, and I'm gonna get into what happened. You know, enough of that crap. You know, because I don't even like hearing it. But. And I want to talk about a little bit of history and steps, you know, because somebody in here that way make it easier. Because like I said, in those 4 years, I did the steps and all that shit. I didn't understand them. I just barely this year, you know, understand them, why they're like they are, why they got them in order. So let's go through that crap real quick, that crap. It's like, oh, wow, time's going by here. Ooh, that's not bad. Anyway. The history, I had to learn the history in order to understand the program. It made it easier for me, you know, like Dr. Silkworth, you know. Dr. Silkworth knew the problem. Dr. Jong knew the solution, but they didn't know how to put it into action, you know. And like, Bob was not the second person, you know. I mean, it went from Bill had to meet Abby, which got sober through Roland. You know, which came through Jung, and then it goes back to Hank. I mean, it's a whole deal thing. It ends up at Bill Dawson right there and the thing right there. So it's just crazy that Bill Wilson knew Abby Thatcher, and Abby Thatcher was in the Oxford group, and he was being looked at through Dr. Jung. You know, and it's like, if you look at this, it's like, it's God. It had to be God. I mean, these people were like different things. One guy knew the problem, one knew the solution. And they put it all together, and man, these guys went through hell. Those guys back there, they kicked some big boulders and rocks out so we could be here today. I mean, if you get into history, man, it's like they went through hell. I mean, there's guys like that did like the third tradition. He was an atheist, man. They wanted to kick him out of this, you know, and he fought for that third tradition. You know, to make it to where, you know, the only requirement is to be a member is to, we know what it says. Anyway, yeah, and it's like, then there's, let's see, who's the other guy? Hank Parkhurst, he's the one that came up with, as we understood him, because they were the atheists and they were agnostic. They didn't even want God in his book. So they agreed to it, and they came up with it, as we understood him, and a power greater than yourself, so they could, you know, for everybody, which is kind of cool, you know. And I was going to go into the first step, you know, because the first and second step are not working steps. All you got to do is be convinced of them, you know. You know, like the first one's honesty, you know. I'm always going to be powerless over alcohol and everything else. But I don't have to be, my life doesn't have to be unmanageable anymore. See? I'm always powerless, but our lives could be manageable now. My life's manageable because of this stuff. You know, so for, one and two is actually, one is A, and two is B and C. See, I used to think, God, where's A at? I'd be looking in here, where's one and two at? You know, I tell people, and it's like, it's in there, it's A, B's, and C's. And you're convinced, you know, you're at step three. And step three, and this is where I had a hard time too, but we're only making a decision. We're making a decision, and a decision without, any decision has to have action after it to make it valid, you know? I mean, I've made so many decisions and I never went through with them. Big deal, you know, it's just a word, you know? So, you're making a decision, the action has to come. It's like, my will is my thinking. My life is my action. So if my thinking is screwed up, my actions are screwed up. So that's all I'm doing is making a decision. Come at 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 is where I'm going to clean up my act so I can give my will in life over to care of God. You know, it's simple, but it wasn't for me at first when I did this, you know. And step four, I mean, this is how easy they are. Now, one and two, you just have to be convinced. There's no work, you're not working steps. Three, you're making a decision. That's all you're doing. And your third step prayer, what that's for is to give you willingness. If you don't have the willingness to do it, that's the prayer that they say, to give you willingness, you know. And then step four, everybody's scared of that and shit, you know. It's like, I'm not going to get into all the different columns and stuff like that, you know. It's like, I used to joke around with Matt and say, yeah, my sex inventory was up and down like a yo-yo, you know. I was like, I mean, it's not that hard, because that's where you're going to get the people that you're going to have to make amends to later in your fourth step. When you do all that and you figure out the stuff you did wrong and what was your problem, you know. I'm getting ahead of myself here. I was kind of scared tonight because I wasn't nervous. I did this a long time ago, and I was nervous for the whole week before. I mean, I was like, I was a basket case. And tonight, I came in here, and I was more excited that I could share, you know, some of this with somebody. And I'm probably going fast. Tom always tells me, slow down when you talk. I'm looking, you know. I get excited. I get excited when I talk about this stuff, you know. And five, okay, this, I'm going to get ahead of myself. Is integrity, you're admitting, the reason we admit to God, ourselves, and another human being, the reason we do to another human being is because I've justified all the shit I've done. I've justified it and made it to where it was all right, you know, over the years. So telling to somebody else, they're going to tell you, hey, you know, this is that, this is you're full of it, and this is what you did. Because I can see your mistakes all day long, man, but I can't see mine. You know, that's why we have to tell another human. And that's not that hard. You know, it seems hard at first, like, oh, God, I got to tell somebody else. You know, I'm sitting here telling how many people. Big deal. Anyway, step eight, we made a list of the people we harmed. You know, the people you got from the other step. Step four, you know who you've harmed. You make a list of all that stuff. Huh? I'm in six right now? Oh, yeah, I was. I'm sorry. No, that's right. See, hey, I'm human. I make mistakes. I'm getting nervous now. No. Step six, willingness. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Okay, I'm willing to. I'm not doing it yet. You know? It's actually the six-step prayer is after that, which takes you into seven after you do that prayer. Because in the prayer, you're asking him, so what are you going to do in seven? I'm going kind of fast here because time and stuff, but yeah. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings is in the prayer when you say it. So it's like, you do six, and it's like, bam, you do the prayer, you're done with seven. It's crazy how it just works like. There's not no work to be done in that, you know? Okay, step eight? Step eight. So six and seven kind of like go together, man. I mean, they're like bam, bam, like the other ones. And this is where I'm getting ready to turn my will, my life over is in these steps after three, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I have to get right with myself. I got right with God. I got to get right with myself. And that's what I'm doing. Trying to. So eight, made a list of the people we harmed, became willing to make amends. That's all we're doing. We're making a list and became. Now I'm willing. Okay. So basically, I'm gonna go to step nine, you know? That's where we make, that's what, I came willing, now I'm gonna do it. You know, make direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. You know, and it doesn't say in the book about living amends, there's direct amends, there's indirect amends, and there's living amends. Direct amends means face-to-face, you're actually going to the person and making your amends, and you're not saying sorry because that doesn't work. You know, indirect is like, say I robbed someplace and I took a bunch of money, and I'm not going to go to jail or anything like that, I'm not going to tell them so, but so now I need to go somewhere and give my time to help out a place like that, or anywhere, you know, put my time into to making it better, you know. If I'm not going to go up and say, hey, I just robbed you for $1,000, you know, and I'm not going to go to jail, I don't want to do that. Or, you know, I'm not going to go tell somebody, hey, I just, I screwed your old lady, I'm sorry. So you gotta watch out what you do, man. You gotta deal with your sponsor, you can't just jump out there and start doing stuff like that because you're going to get in trouble, you know. Oh yeah, you stole $1,000, okay, call the cops. You know, and then there's a living amends, which I had to do a lot. You know, there's people overseas, or there was people overseas in Hawaii and stuff like that. I can't go make amends to them, you know. But what I can do is I can be a better person and just do the right thing every day, you know. And that's basically for me, to be the right person and do what I'm supposed to be doing. What I should have been, what God put us on this earth to do, you know. It's actually, and I know people that do this, my mom. She don't even know the steps. She don't know nothing. And she that's how she lives. It's crazy because, I mean, people that are not alcoholics, there's some people out there that that's the way they live. They live like this because this is the way we were meant to live, you know. But it took me, I'm 58 years old, man. It took me all this time, you know. And I destroyed a lot of shit. You know, my kids, I haven't seen my middle son for 20 years because of my alcoholism and the way I lived. You know, that you know, hopefully one day he'll come and see me, you know, maybe want to hit me or hug me, I don't know, you know. But at the time, his mom was a good mom, they had, you know, they're wealthy and she took really good care of him, so I stepped away. You know, never to go back, never to bother him because I knew that I wasn't right for him. You know. So I mean, stuff like that still hurts me. You know, I put my daughter through a lot of shit, you know, me and her are best of friends now, you know, and I stopped doing this, huh? Nine, living amends. So, you know, it's not that bad. It depends, you know. How you gonna, if you gotta make direct demands, sometimes it's pretty tough, you know. And 10, continue to take personal inventory. So some people think when they go to bed at night, they do 10. No, do 10 all day long. It's to make sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing all day long, you know. Like, I gotta check myself. If I do something wrong, you know. It's like, my walk should be stronger than my talk. It's like, I talk tonight and I go out there and I start cussing at somebody, man. It's like, that's not right. You know, I just sat here and spilled all this stuff and I'm gonna go out there. So our walk needs to be stronger than our talk, you know. And that's one of our traditions too, you know, that we need to do. And step 11 is what you do at night. It's sought through prayer and meditation to prove our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. That's before you go to bed. That's the step you do, not 10. 10 is like, so you don't go back to 4. It's kind of keeping yourself clean, you know. Like when I do something bad, I'll do step 10. And if I have to, I'll just take it to God, you know. Like, hey, you know, I just cuss up this old lady in front of me because she's driving slow. But, you know, how do I know what she's got in there? Because there's been times when I'm driving, I might have a cake or something in there that I can't go quick, you know. So I don't know. They might have had a kid in there. It's like, but I catch myself today, like, oh, God, you know, excuse me, I'm sorry for that, you know. But I do it, you know, I'm human, you know, and I'm not saying I won't do it, but I probably will do it if I, maybe when I leave here or something, I don't know, kick the dog. Anyway, it's step 12, service, man, is what I'm doing right now. You've got to carry the message, man. I just hope somebody in here would get something, you know. And it might be garbled up and like that because I'm not a speaker, man. I don't do this. It's not, you know, I know somebody like Lee, he does that for, you know, it's what he does and he's good at it, you know. But to sit up here and in front of a bunch of people, I'm not nervous, but it's kind of like, I know I'm jumping around. This is new for me. And I'm excited. You know, I got a year today, you know. But this year I got right now is so, I'm going to tell you, from where I came from, in 1 year, I've conquered Hep C. I've recovered from alcohol and drugs. I ended up going to school. You know, I had an idea in my head. I want to go to school for heavy equipment operators. And I pursued it, man. I prayed, but I got out there and I pursued it for 2 months trying to find financial aid to do this. And I went to a lot of places, got turned down a lot of places. And one day I called, I was in contact with the school, for, you know, here and there. I talked to them and I called and this lady goes, "It's your lucky day." She goes, "We give a vet one time every year a $20,000 scholarship and you just happen to call at the right time."
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, tell me, that's not God. I told her, I go, she goes, "Isn't God good?" That's what she said.
Mm-hmm.
And I started crying, and I go, "You're my angel." And she was. I mean, a $20,000 scholarship, one bet out of a year, and I got it because I called at the right time. That was God, you know? And this year, too, both child support cases closed. After all these years I've been paying on it, it sent me like over $2,000 back. Child support. Now, no, child support does not send you money. Yeah. And this is after I tied at the church. I had $80 and I was going, you know, and then Matt tells me, "Man, you spent that $80 on dope in one day, you know, or booze." And I'm thinking, yeah, and I tithed it. And I swear the next week I got 14 checks, each of them $45. From child support back pay. I don't know why they kept, you know, 14 checks, but it was like, whoa, you know, and case closed. I get another $1,200 from my other child support case closed. This all happened this year. It's like, I go, wow, and child support does not give you money. It's like, whoa, you know, is there any mistake here or what? Even when I went to cash it, the person goes, "What's this?" I've never seen a check from child support. Never. And that was God right there, you know. And 2 days before I graduated from the school, I went up to Stockton. It was like a 6-week course for to get certified and licensed for heavy equipment. But see, I've already done heavy equipment, so it was like getting reacquainted. Years ago I did it, so. And it was hard. People up there were drinking and partying, and they failed. When it came down to the end, they didn't pass. They didn't get their license. And they're like, "Well, what happened?" You know, like, I stayed in my room. I studied. And I even actually, my roommate was like doing dope in the bathroom. They were drinking and bringing people. So what I did is I took myself out of the equation. I went down to the desk and said, you need to move me. And I explained to him. I didn't tell him about the dope. I told him, "These guys are drinking and stuff like that, and I don't drink." Boom, they moved me. They moved me to the other room. And basically, I stayed here for 6 weeks. I stayed in my room and I studied. And I passed. I got my license at 58.
Yeah.
I don't want to cry right now, man. It's like God is still working in my life, man. And 2 days before I graduate, my daughter calls me. She joined the Army.
All right. You'll be missing her, I know.
I'm happy for her, man. But she can start a new life. She can start her own life. She don't have to be here and do the things that their friends are doing, you know, drinking. She's a good kid, you know. So I'm proud of her, man. She signed up with the Army. You know, that's cool. I'm all for it, you know. You got to start your own new life. You get a check every month when you get out. Like me, I got a medical for the rest of my life, you know. And plus, in this year, I filed claims for my veterans benefits. I'm getting those. And this is just in this 1 year. I'm getting housing. I just talked to Friday. They're going to pay 8 months of rent, so security first and last, the utility. It's God, man. This is all God. My life has changed, man, in 1 year. I'm amazed. They say when you're halfway through, you'll be amazed. I'm blown away. I mean, it's like, pinch me, man. Am I in a dream? And it's like, that's why I'm going to cheer up right now. This stuff doesn't happen, man. Give you a $20,000 scholarship. Hey, you called at the right time. You won, you know. It's like, yeah. But the thing was, she goes, "Okay, but the thing is, you have to be up here in 5 hours. That's when I was running around. Like, I gave the keys to somebody for the meeting, and I just had to leave. I packed up my stuff and left. You know, drove up there at night. It's like I had to, you know, for that kind of money. So, I mean, I got that all done. I'm going to go out Monday. I'm going to get me a job. I haven't worked in 17 years. I've been on Social Security Disability Insurance. They told me that they're going to give me 9 months. They'll pay my Social Security still and let me work to see if I can get back into it. Then after that, they'll give me my 3 years of Medicare, which I don't need because I have lifetime with a VA. You know, now I'm going to have money coming in for my claims, you know, for PTSD, for hearing, tinnitus, all kinds of stuff. And then I'm going to go back, they're going to go back 40 years retroactive because they should have been paying me because the medical discharge they never gave me. So they're going to go back 40 years and try to, you know, even if I get a piece of that, it's like, that's big. And this is all happened because of AA. All AA and God, man. If I was out there using and drinking, none of this shit would happen. I wouldn't even care. I wouldn't even try to do anything, you know. And now it's like, my life's good, man. I have a good woman, I mean, that loves me, and I couldn't ask for any more, man. I mean, just today, I thought I was going to go out and eat and shit. We ended up, Kristen has this big old party, man, all these people, you know. I'm like, fuck. You know, that doesn't happen because we have birthdays in AA. There was three of us that had, three of us with 1 year today. That's a miracle right there, man. And we all came from a shithole. You know, basically came from a shithole, man. And you know what? It doesn't matter. I could still go farther. I've not hit my bottom. I don't want to. Because I've hit pretty far down. I mean, I can go farther. Like they said, we're only hitting ledges a long way down. It won't take me that long. It's funny how, you know, I got a year now. In 10 minutes, I could screw that up. 10 minutes, I could be high and drinking right now without money. That's how scary it is. I don't want to do that. That's right. That'd be like spitting in God's face, man. If God's been there for me, it's like God was there tonight, you know. And I know I jumped around. I had a lot of stuff. I even had index cards the other a couple days ago. I ripped them up and threw them in the trash. I was all stupid. I was there for like index cards. I was like, come on, you know. And there's a lot of stuff like that. You know, I had jokes I was going to say, but I don't better knock. There's some blondes in the room. It might take it bad. I'll say it anyway. What's a blonde and a long-neck Corona have in common? They're both dead and neck up. Anyway, you know, I hope somebody got something out of it. I mean, I know right there, I hope you want me for a sponsor. I'll help you out. Whatever you need, man, I'll do that. I won't give you money or give you rides and shit, but I'll help you out with the program. Man, this is cool. I'm really glad that I got to speak up here. Thank you, Kristen, man. I mean, it took a while, huh? From the time that we said, oh, yeah, we'll put it down. I went to school. I did all kinds of shit, you know. I came back, and it was like, okay, it's time. And I'm so glad, man. I feel good. This was for me as much as for you guys, you know. And it's simple, man. And if you need, I'll tell you what. Go on the internet, drsilkworth.net. Bam. The audio, man, they read it from the history all the way through the whole book. They break it down. They tell you everything. They tell you everything. The doctor's opinion. The doctors are even saying that they can't do nothing with medical or science. It's all psych. It's all physical. It's all our spiritual. It has to be from God. For our power greater than ourselves. You know, I'm gonna stop at this because I'm gonna start rambling and stuff like that. You know, I'm just gonna tell you, you know what? My hope is that somebody get this from what I shared tonight and do the same thing, man. Your life, especially if you're young, man. If you're young, man, run with this. It's not. And somebody, I read somewhere that we were a cult and we were brainwashed. And I kind of go, well, we're not a cult, but we kind of are brainwashed. But we're brainwashed with the right way of living. So there's nothing wrong with that. They brainwashed me, man. I've been living like shit for so many years, you know. I'm still alive. I had Hep C for over 40 years. My liver's still good. My pancreas still good. I mean, it's amazing. God had a plan for me. This is probably it, you know, maybe to help somebody. Anyway, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn, for speaking tonight, and let's give them another.